This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Benjamin Law is well known to our community as an author, a columnist. He's written a number of books, probably well known for his book Gay Asia, which I think has been a great read. Benjamin, are you there? Good morning to you.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you for coming
thanks
on.
Thanks for making the time. We really appreciate it.
There's lots we want to talk about with you, Benjamin, including your most recent publication, which is the Quarterly Essay. I've just acquired my own copy and I've just started flicking through it, but I haven't actually sat down and had a good read yet.
Oh, it's only just come out. You've got plenty of time.
Well, yes, I may have plenty of time, but I'm really eager to get my teeth stuck into it. And, of course, what you talk about is safe schools and your analysis and perspective of what occurred during the safe schools debacle most recently. We would like to talk about that, but we want to start with your views on marriage equality and how you see the current debate unfolding at the moment. So what are some of your perceptions and thoughts?
I was reading a really interesting analysis in the Fin Review this morning by Philip Curry, who's the political reporter there, and he said that the one thing that the No campaign has done really well, especially in the last week that we've saw, is really take up the mantlehood of victimhood quite effectively, which I find quite bizarre and slightly deranged as well, considering that we're the community that has been discriminated against for, you know, time immemorial. But that has been having an effect in terms of the polling as well. The Yes campaign, what happened with Tony Abbott with the headbutt, for instance, that's been conflated almost as a strategic attack by the Yes campaign, which I find just really, really strange, and the vacuum of logic there is infuriating. I mean, what are you implying when people say the Yes campaign has really done itself a disservice with the headbutt? It's like, are you implying the Yes campaign actually sent someone to Hobart to headbutt Tony Abbott? The strange kind of conflation with these two incidents are really odd. And then also beyond that, the fact that Abbott went to the media before he went to police or medical staff, I think is very, very telling that they're united in their strategy, which is to say that we're the ones who are losing out here.
And, you know, it always amuses me, Patrick, it's Macca here that...
It's Benjamin, actually.
Sorry, Benjamin, oh my God.
Sorry, you can call me whatever you like.
Oh, okay. That, you know, for a lot of the No campaigners, and particularly those of faith, and whilst I respect people's faith, it's the organisations and their representatives sometimes that I think are really laying it on with the trowel here. They're talking about being bullied and being victims. These organisations are the only organisations, incorporated, unincorporated, businesses or whatever, that can legally sack people for their sexuality.
Yeah, it's a bit rich, isn't it?
It is.
And I think the other thing, I think the other thing in all of this is that there's quite a significant disjoint between religious leaders and congregations in terms of leadership and institutionalized delivery of policy versus people who say are Australian Christians. There is a bit of a divide because probably for half a decade now, the majority of Australian Christians have consistently supported same-sex marriage. But when you've got certain schools, when you've got certain churches, when you've got people like the Australian Christian Lobby claiming to represent that they represent the majority of Australian Christians, well, that's just plainly wrong, and that's seen in the data. The fact that, for instance, one of the launch events of my quarterly essay about safe schools was held in a church, I think is very, very telling. Mm. That church had a rainbow flag outside with the word yes on. I think there is leadership within Christian communities, leaderships and congregations that are really taking up the mantle in fighting the Yes campaign, but they are really drowned out because the whole construction of, the Yes versus No campaign is really broken down into two-dimensional caricatures with very little nuance. And that's happened with safe schools as well, time and time again. What I think is important is to find those pockets of allyship and agreement and really amplify those voices, especially within communities that have been traditionally painted as enemies of LGBTIQ people.
I wanted to touch on that a little bit, Benjamin, that communities, I spoke last night, pre-recorded, and we're playing it later, Ilias Yashan, and he was talking about the difficulty in coming out to family, and then once you actually do that, and there's grudging acceptance, then there's a little bit more acceptance, and then it's a case of, and actually having had a previous Greek boyfriend, same situation. Oh, yes, you know, coming out to the family, that's really difficult. And the family, it actually doesn't matter what cultural background it is, being non-white, let's just say that. You can come out to us, but don't tell anyone else. Don't tell your uncles. Don't let anyone in the community see. And I mean, this is such a tragedy that people have the courage to do it, and then they've still got to continue to hide it. And some of these community, I won't call them leaders, I'll call them rabble-rousers, that are actually advocating for the no case. And I wonder whether they actually realise what they're doing is they're contributing to the breakup of families. Do you think they can realise that?
No, I think you're bang on, because so much of the No campaign is about preserving of the sanctity of the family. But I imagine that everyone who is a part of the LGBTIQ community would have seen in their social media feeds the fact that their families, whether they're Anglo or not, a lot of us have gotten to the stage with our families where we've achieved this kind of equilibrium.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, look, we don't accept same-sex marriage, but, you know, bring your girlfriend or your boyfriend to Christmas and we all get along, we won't talk about X, Y, Z. We've achieved a kind of an acknowledged peace between us, and that's the best that we're going to get. And what the horror of this kind of, you know, I won't call it a vote because votes are binding, I won't call it a plebiscite because plebiscites are mandatory, and I won't even call it a survey because surveys are statistically weighted to be accurate.
And usually well run.
Exactly. It's a $122 million vox pop, essentially, of the nation. But what this vox pop is really showing us is that people are starting to have those really difficult conversations with their families again that they haven't had to do since they came out or introduced their partner to the family. And they are being reminded that their parents will never wholly accept them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had some friends who've said, you know, Christmas is going to be really hard, if not impossible, this year. And this is what... And this is why I hold Malcolm Turnbull really responsible for the damage he has inflicted on Australian families in the past few weeks.
We've actually got to go to a quick break, Benjamin. We'll be really quick. We'll be right back. But I want you to just quickly think about, we've got a comment from a listener here. Have you seen today's Good Weekend in The Australian?
Oh, would that be the Andrew Hastie cover story?
Yeah, well, yes.
Is that what we're thinking of? Weekend Australian magazine.
Yeah, so let's have a chat about that when we come back. I actually call him Andrew Pasty. You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Tess, speaking with Benjamin Law, and some of your fans are out there, Benjamin. They love your television work, your writing, and we do too. So thank you for that.
Oh, that's really sweet. Well, I love Joy.
Oh, so even better.
I'll totally reciprocal.
Fantastic.
Applause all round. There you go. So Andrew Hastie, he infamously or notoriously did the marriage debate in Parliament House with Coopers. Still don't know whether they actually had permission from the presiding officers to do that, but anyway. Caused a bit of a commotion. But Andrew Hastie is one of those commentators that appears reasonable on the surface. Then you realise the man is like a big pus ball of hate.
Those words didn't come from me. If anyone from The Australian is listening, it came from Joy FM.
It came from Macca, actually, you know, not
more,
even Joy.
You know, more people buy the Geelong Advertiser than read The Australian. But anyway, go on, Benjamin.
Look, if anyone needs some context in terms of what we're talking about, I sent out a tweet about a week and a half before my quarterly essay on safe schools came out. The Australian picked up on this tweet where I essentially said, you know, sometimes it goes through my head whether I'd hate screw all of the anti-gay MPs to get if it meant they got the homophobia out of their system, you know, effectively implying I would offer myself up if that's what they needed to get those urges out of their system. What the Australian interpreted it as was that suddenly I was a rape advocate, advocating to rape the homophobia out of people, which I find really almost hilarious. I mean, it's grim because, one, I'd never joke about sexual assault. But the second thing is, I think the Australian underestimated how, one, willing their readers were to give people the benefit of the doubt, and two, their access to a wonderful, obscure online resource called Google. And if you Google what hate screw actually means, you'll see that there are all these articles about how it's complete consensual sex between people who find themselves disagreeable in that moment. And in fact, most of the critics of that tweet, including Andrew Hastie, their partners have probably engaged in it with them, that's all.
Did the Australian mark this, as they do most of the stuff they print, as an exclusive?
Oh, yeah, which I find really kind of hilarious.
Isn't it?
One of the things that I point out in the quarterly essay, Moral Panic 101, is that the very first story that they published on Safe Schools, which was on the 10th of February 2016, was marked exclusive gay activists accessing your children, teaching them about LGBTIQ when they don't even know their three R's. That's not an exclusive story, because that story, the fact is that All of Us Resource, which was a part of Safe Schools, had been reported on by Fairfax, like in November as well. The Australians' interpretation of what constitutes news, what constitutes an exclusive lately, is a little bit skewed. And this is not to discount the very good journalism that the newspaper still does and is capable of doing, but I think campaigns and moral panics such as these really undermine that good work.
If you could, in terms of Safe Schools, Benjamin, I'm interested. Mm. Is there any component of it, if you were running it, is there any component of it that you would change?
No, not at all. And the thing is, when we talk about safe schools as well, I think people who are both on the pro and against side of the same schools debate are usually debating something that they don't actually quite understand. And I count myself in those numbers. So when I sent out a tweet at the end of November after, a 13-year-old kid called Tyrone Unsworth had taken his own life, very tragically, in Brisbane, there was a lot of commentary about why we need safe schools to protect Tyrone Unsworth. And I tweeted something similarly in support. And kids, you know, whether they belong to the LGBTIQ community, whether they're questioning, or whether they're straight. As we know, straight kids are also subject to homophobia in the schoolyard as well. But at that time, what I realise now that I've done the research is I didn't even really understand what safe schools was, how it was delivered, what it actually means. I think a lot of people will read, and a lot of people who have read the quarterly essay, are actually quite shocked in terms of what safe schools is, but not shocked for the reasons that we're told we should be shocked, but shocked in terms of how safe, how tame it is, shocked in terms of how little bearing the news reports on safe schools has on the reality of what...
And how common sense it is as well.
That's right. It's very, very tame. And in terms of safe schools being conflated with teaching kids about LGBTIQ issues, there's absolutely an optional resource that very few teachers and principals have used in classrooms. But the fact is, we're now talking about safe schools as if safe schools is that resource, when on the very basic level, it's a pledge to keep LGBTIQ kids safe. That's it.
Benjamin, I'm interested in what motivated you to write about this, because it's quite an insightful and it's a very well considered and well researched piece, and obviously you put a fair bit of effort into it. I know that you're an author and obviously a thinker, but why did you select this? What was the motivation behind that?
So I got to the end of 2016. I was in China, and by that stage, I think a lot of LGBTIQ people in Australia were burnt out with the non-stop coverage on safe schools by The Australian. By that stage, The Australian had reported close to 90,000 words on safe schools, at least one story every 2 days. And in all of that, I wasn't really quite sure. Like, I thought I knew what safe schools was because I'd read a lot of that coverage. By November, the young school kid I mentioned before, Tyrone Unsworth, took his life, and I know that it seems like a almost a performance of false intimacy to say that you grieve for someone, especially someone you don't know. But I think a lot of people, when that case came out, because he was so young, and because if you remember the photos of Tyrone Unsworth, you know, that big, big-eyed, gorgeous kid, it felt really personal. You really did think that could have been me. And so I felt like I needed to write... Well, one, I felt like I needed to write a story that I needed to read, which is, well, what is safe schools, actually? When we talk about safe schools now in even neutral media reports about safe schools, it's reported as the controversial safe schools program. I wanted to question why something like safe schools becomes controversial in the first place. That doesn't happen in a vacuum. That happens in this case with a very concerted campaign against it. And if you call something controversial enough, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? And the second thing was I wanted to look at what the program actually taught and delivered. And then I very, very quickly realized that it's not an essential part, it's not a mandatory part of safe schools to teach anything. And once I realized that, I thought...
Except for Victoria, of course, because the Victorian government has actually insisted that this be rolled out in all schools by the end of next year.
You're absolutely correct. In Victoria, we'll be rolled out in every public school by the end of 2018. But even in that iteration, in the current iteration of safe schools, you still don't need to teach anything to children. The only reason that optional resource about LGBTIQ issues exist is because teachers asked for it. That's a really important thing. The reason why safe schools existed in the first place is because teachers and principals asked for it. The reason why that optional all of us resource exists is because principals and teachers asked for it. When it's rolled out in Victoria, it will be up to principals and teachers, as it has always been, up to them in terms of how they deliver that program. There's no mandatory curricula or curriculum required of teachers to teach it. They're encouraged to take up teacher-principal training. What Victoria is asking of its safe school signatories for the first time is sign the pledge, as you've always been asked to, in terms of how you're going to keep your LGBTIQ kids safe, and then deliver your own outline in terms of how you plan to do that. And then it's really up to them. That's it.
Benjamin, we have to go, but I want to close with this thought. Those who oppose safe schools like to think they're logical. Well, here's a bit of logic for them. You take away safe schools, you actually have unsafe schools.
Exactly. I mean, why did that... The question here is, why did we make safe schools in the first place?
Exactly.
And for a very long time, this was a program that had bipartisan support on both state and federal levels because it was an uncontroversial thing to acknowledge that we've got the highest rates of suicidality of any demographic, and that's amplified when you're young. You can read about that more in the quarterly essay.
We will.
Will, and we'll be talking more about that during the rest of our show. Benjamin, I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to come and speak with us this morning. I would also like to put out a call. If you're in Melbourne, please come and join us here in the studio one Saturday morning.
We'd love to have you in.
Co-host with us.
Oh, thank you so much. I'd love to come in again.
Spend the morning with us. We'd love to actually meet you in person and allow you to steer the microphone for a while.
That'd be terrific. Anything for Joy.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.